Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, the stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Greta Anderson, together with my co-host, Gail Seiler. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Greta, and hello to you, the listener.
Our topic today is the Des Moines Waterworks lawsuit against three counties in the northwest quadrant of the state.
You may have read in the papers how the Des Moines Waterworks had to use its expensive nitrate removal system this winter. Unlike many Iowa municipalities, which get their water from underground, Des Moines gets its water from the surface waters of the Raccoon and Des Moines rivers. Those rivers have seen rising nitrate levels, which is unusual for the off-season. High nitrates are usually seen in the spring as farmers prepare to plant.
This situation motivated the Des Moines Waterworks CEO and the Board of Directors to file a Notice of Intent to Sue back on January 9th of this year. The suit was against Sac County, Calhoun County, and Buena Vista County supervisors, specifically in their roles as trustees of drainage districts in their county. More on that in a moment. One thing to keep in mind is that state law requires a 60-day waiting period between notice of intent to sue and the actual filing of a lawsuit. That 60-day period will expire next week.
This lawsuit has attracted a lot of attention, not just in Iowa, but across the country, because one government entity, the public utility, is suing another government entity over an environmental quality issue, and that's a bit unusual.
Today we talked to Bill Stowe, the CEO of Des Moines Waterworks, about the lawsuit.
We will also hear from Neil Hamilton, director of the Agricultural Law Center at Drake University, to get his perspective on it.
Before that, we speak to John Torbert, the executive director of a little-known statewide organization, the Iowa Drainage District Association. His organization is deeply involved in the lawsuit as it represents drainage districts, which are really at the crux of this debate.
Drainage districts. So, Greta, by now our listeners must be asking, what is a drainage district?
I'll give them some clues. Story County has 119 drainage districts. Counties in southern Iowa, where there are lots of hills to drain the land naturally, have exactly zero. Counties in northwest Iowa have as many as 400 each and have a full-time drainage clerk on their staff.
Okay, so Story County has 119 drainage districts. Can you give the listeners a few more clues about what a drainage district is?
Well, honestly, I really had no idea what a drainage district was when I began researching this story last Friday. But in that research, I read the term county drainage clerk in the newspaper and thought to myself, I wonder whether we have a county drainage clerk here in Story County.
And?
As it turns out, we do. His name is Scott Wall, and drainage clerk is just one of his responsibilities. The rest of the time, he is the county's mapping technician, which makes sense because drainage districts are geographic entities. A district is defined by the shared tile or ditch that drains the land.
A geographic entity defined by the tile it drains into. That sounds vaguely like a watershed.
Exactly. So Scott was very helpful. I met with him this past Monday morning, and he had all kinds of maps laid out to show me what we were dealing with. What he had to say was fascinating on many levels, and it's also really important in understanding this lawsuit by Des Moines Waterworks.
So let's listen to Scott Wall, our county mapping technician and drainage clerk, on the topic of drainage districts.
A drainage district is essentially a watershed that's served by a tile or, in some cases, a waterway that has been straightened. And then they exist, just like tiling anywhere, it exists to run drain water off the land so the land is suitable for agricultural purposes. The background for them was created around 1885 by the state legislature, and it's all governed by the Code of Iowa, which is the laws of the state of Iowa. And essentially what it was that the drainage district code allows people in a given area to petition the county board of supervisors to create a drainage district if their land is unsuitable for agriculture, for living. It's mosquito infested, which anybody who knows something about the history of Story County, we were largely swampland when the first pioneers got here. And then, as I said, this started in the late 1800s, 1885, 1890. And so before that, people were really on their own you know, everybody had their own ways trying to drain their own personal property, but because drainage affects, you know, a large area, it's hard to drain your land if you've got to drain on your neighbor's land, who he's not doing anything. His land is also a swamp at the time. So what they would do, they'd petition the county, say that, that for the public welfare and for agriculture and whatever else they'd come up with, they would like a drainage district established, and the county would hire an engineer who would survey the area, and then he would come back with a yay or nay recommendation. And then so if he came back and said, yes, I believe that a drainage district would serve the public good in this area, he'd provide a plat of the district, which is just a map of the boundaries of the district, and he'd recommend where the tile would go, how large that tile would be, whether or not there would be an open ditch. He'd make all those recommendations, and based on that, then there'd be a lengthy process whereby citizens could protest the implementation of a drainage district, or they could agree with it. They'd go through probably about a 3-year process in most cases. And the end result of that being that the county would establish a drainage district, they'd hire a contractor to come in through a bidding process like we do today on any construction project. And that contractor would come in and lay the district tile. And once it was in place, it would become the property of all the residents of the district. So everybody in the district owns the district facilities, which are tile and open ditches. It's administered under the Code of Iowa by the Board of Supervisors acting as drainage district trustees. There is a section in the code that if the people in a given district didn't want the county to administer their tile, they could form their own trustees and take it over. Nobody wants to do that because when the tile breaks, the county goes in and repairs it, and that's billed back to the drainage district, to everybody in the district. And nobody wants to be responsible for billing their neighbors, so it's easier to let the county take the heat, you know, the supervisors take the heat for that. The advantage of a drainage district is it allows the people in that district to have drainage for a reduced price. They don't have to pay for the entire cost of putting a tile into the nearest waterway. It's a shared cost. And when those tiles break, it's a shared cost. So again, the supervisors are the drainage district trustees. The county is also responsible for maintaining that tile in its original design specifications, which just means they have to make sure it keeps draining. The water was designed to drain. When the district was established, most of these were in 1910 to 1930. We have one that's from about 1953. We have one that's from 1895. But most of our districts are in that 20-year time span in the 1910s and 20s. And so they're approaching 100 years old. The design life of the clay tile they use is about 100 years, so we're seeing more and more issues today with tiles collapsing. Our open ditches are growing up to trees. We're trying to address that and clean them out. That's another issue we're seeing with the tiles today is because these were put in 100 years ago, nobody could foresee what today they're doing, what's called pattern tiling, and they bring in all this heavy equipment and they just lay tile every so many feet, and it's very intensive. And so we've got tiles out there that were designed to drain a combination of prairie and ag land. Back in the early part of the century, everybody had animals, and so you'd keep part of your land in prairie and part of it was farmed. And now it's almost all farms, all corn and soybeans. That drains much more quickly than rangeland does, so just everything increases the water flow into a tile that was designed for the flow 100 years ago.
You're listening to Local Talk, and that was Scott Wall, drainage clerk of Story County, explaining the creation of drainage districts around a common tile for the public good. These days, you see a lot of farmers putting in black PVC piping, which is also tile, but that is private tile that either hooks into district tile or drains directly into waterways, and they don't have to register that tile with the county. They just go ahead and put it in.
Driving around Story County, it's really hard to believe that this area was once a marshland.
That's right. According to the DNR, wetland basins covered approximately 11% of Iowa's surface area back in the pioneer days. Mm-hmm. And most of this was concentrated in the north and northwest in what is called the Des Moines Lobe, where the Des Moines Glacier moved in. Later in the interview, Scott made the point that although we, Story County, have 119 drainage districts, our neighbor to the east, Marshall County, has only 3. So geography is a big part of this lawsuit, and even though our waters don't drain to Des Moines, we are in the thick of things when it comes to drainage districts.
Right. So what did Scott Wall make of the lawsuit?
Well, he had reread the Iowa code as it pertains to drainage, and frankly, he was a little baffled. Here's what he said.
So there's an extensive code section. It's Chapter 468 in the Iowa Code is drainage districts, and I was kind of looking through there to Friday after you'd called me to see if there was anything like that addressed. And really all it says is that once the drainage systems are in place, the trustees of the district have to maintain them to their original design specifications or design capacity. But it doesn't have anything about what drains into the district or what can drain out of the district. The sole purpose for the district is to move water off the land, off agricultural land, so it's suitable for farming. And the issue with Des Moines is the nitrates that is coming into the water. And, of course, anything that moves water off the land faster, that increases the water flow. It increases the flow of nitrates and other agricultural chemicals. But I'm not sure that those drainage districts have any requirements on them by law. So there's nothing in the drainage code that would address the quality of the water that comes out of the district. And then, of course, that goes back to when the code was written. Water quality wasn't an issue back then.
So Scott and I went on to speculate about this lawsuit and its meaning, but neither of us knew more than what we'd read in the papers. Then, just as I was leaving his office, he said, "You know, there's this organization, the Iowa Drainage District Association. They have a lobbyist in Des Moines, and being a little closer to the action, he might have something to say."
And did he?
Yes, he did. For listeners who've just tuned in, we're talking about the Des Moines Water Works lawsuit against Sac, Calhoun, and Buena Vista County supervisors in their roles as trustees of drainage districts in their counties. These are geographic districts as small as 1 square mile section or large enough to include 100 land holdings. These districts are defined by the county-managed tile that their own private tiles drain into. Welcome to the show, John Torbert.
Thanks for having me on.
You are the executive director of the Iowa Drainage District Association, IDDA. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about the organization, how it's structured and the membership? What's your job, basically?
Well, drainage districts in Iowa, we have about 3,000 of them. And under state law, most of those districts are governed by County Board of Supervisors, who essentially act in a dual capacity in those situations. They wear a county supervisor hat, and then they wear a hat as the trustee of the drainage districts in their county. So most of my membership is indirect. In other words, the districts don't join my association directly. The County Board of Supervisors votes to join on behalf of their districts. So most of my membership is county supervisors. We also do have some districts in Iowa that are governed by elected trustees, which is an option under state law. And we do have a few of those districts in our membership also. And for belonging to IDDA, we become the voice of drainage districts in the state. We're very active in the state legislature and also with state and federal regulators on drainage issues.
So what were your thoughts back in early January when you heard that the Des Moines Water Works was planning to sue drainage districts in three counties in northwest Iowa? Those are Sac County, Buena Vista, and Calhoun.
Correct. Well, it wasn't a surprise. We have been hearing rumors for, probably a year and a half to 2 years that something like that might be in the offing. So I don't think it was a surprise that there was at least a potential for a lawsuit. I think the surprise to me is that it was drainage districts that were targeted. I believe that there are other groups that could have been sued which would have had more potential for success from the other side of the issue, but that's not for me to decide, I guess.
Well, I'm curious, what entities do you think might have been sued instead of the drainage districts?
Well, I think probably the most logical one is the state. The state has the responsibility of enacting and enforcing water quality laws, and it would seem to me that if you're really trying to change law, which is essentially what this lawsuit would do, is trying to change law, then I think it would have been a better place to go after the state government or after the federal government. Drainage districts have no authority under state law to regulate landowners that are part of that district. So it's puzzling, I guess.
So you were thinking, for instance, the Iowa DNR or the EPA?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Say more about the law as it relates to drainage districts in the context of this lawsuit. You said there's nothing in the law that says the counties need to regulate the drainage districts in terms of water quality.
If you look at drainage law, and it's sort of complex and difficult to go through, but if you look at drainage law, you can see very clearly that drainage districts and the creation of a drainage district has one purpose, and that is to remove excess moisture from the land so the land becomes more productive. There is no mention in the drainage laws about any responsibility for water quality issues or about the water that comes into the districts. So essentially, to try to change the process so that county supervisors would, in essence, become regulators over the landowners is a 180-degree shift in policy.
How often is drainage law changed? I mean, you're down there acting on behalf of the supervisors to make sure the regulations are accommodating or understanding of the needs of your members. How often is this law tinkered with?
Well, there's minor changes that take place on sort of an ongoing basis. I mean, there's legislation basically each year that will make minor tweaks to the statutes. There is one bill that just came out of committee yesterday, which we hope will see passage this year. So there are changes each year, but they're not whole-scale changes. They're mainly modernizing the statutes and making sure they're workable.
And back when these laws were written, when was that?
Most of the drainage laws were written in the early 1900s.
So at that time, farming conditions were very different back then.
Yes, that is correct.
And farming practices.
I think it's a tribute to the people that wrote those laws that they have stood up so well under time.
And I was talking to the local drainage clerk in Story County, and he was saying that many of the pipes, the actual tiles that form the districts, were laid about back that time as well. And so they're reaching the end of their lifetime, about 100 years. Is this a problem that you're seeing around the state, that some of the tiles are becoming outdated, easily broken, maybe not adequate in size?
Yes, it is a problem. We freely acknowledge that the aging drainage infrastructure is an ongoing issue, and it's going to be one that has to be corrected. Of course, the issue that comes with that, if you want to upgrade the drainage infrastructure, it's a cost, and it's a cost that has to be taken on by the landowners in the district. So you're seeing upgrades all the time, but it's going to be a slow process.
So if the law were to change at this time to incorporate the need for, say, some kind of the installation of a system that would filter the water, now might be a good time in terms of a lot of these drain tiles are being replaced anyway because of their age. Why not at the same time that you're installing a new tile, put in some kind of filtration system that would remove nitrates from the water?
Yes, I certainly think you can make a case for that. I don't know that I would use the word filtration systems, but I think if a district is going through the process of replacing some tile that has, been in the ground for 100-plus years and is looking at a redesign of the drainage system, then potentially one of the things that could be taken into consideration is how do we also deal with a water quality issue. Now, again, that's also an issue of cost and an added cost about just, you know, replacing of infrastructure. The things that would have to take place on the landscape to have cleaner agricultural water, they're not mysterious. people know what has to be done. The issue is most of these things involve, number one, taking land out of production, and two, installation cost, and three, ongoing maintenance cost. So the question is, what's the best way to deal with the issue? Is it whole-scale changes on the landscape, or is it more incremental changes, such as what we have under the nutrient reduction strategy, and then treating the water when it needs to be treated? I mean, looking at the numbers out of Iowa State on what the cost would be in basically the Des Moines lobe, north central, northwest, northern Iowa, to achieve measurable reductions in nitrogen and phosphorus, you're talking $1 billion plus. And that $1 billion plus number would come directly out of the ag economy. And that's just installation. That's not ongoing cost. So you're talking about significant changes in terms of how we do business and significant cost.
All right. Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, you know, the thing I'd like to leave your listeners with is that there is a perception out there that by regulating this practice, everything gets better. There is no evidence that the regulations envisioned would make anything better, that anything would drastically change. I think it would make a lot more work for a lot of bureaucrats, but in terms of achieving measurable water quality, that's very questionable.
Okay, thank you. John Torbert, Executive Director of the Iowa Drainage District Association.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We are your co-hosts for today, Greta Anderson and Gail Seiler. Later in the hour, we're going to talk to a specialist in agricultural law from Drake University. His name is Neil Hamilton, and we'll get his views on this topic.
Our topic is the Des Moines Water Works lawsuit against three counties in the watersheds of the Des Moines and Raccoon Rivers, where the utility gets its water. When we come back, we hear from Bill Stowe, the utility's CEO, who has made water quality in this region an issue ever since he was hired.
People disagreeing on just about everything, yeah. Makes you stop and wonder why. Why, only yesterday I saw somebody on the street who just couldn't help but cry. Oh, but this old river keeps on rolling, though. No matter what gets in the way and which way the wind does blow. And as long as it does, I just sit here and watch the river flow.
Bill Stowe, you filed a notice of intent to sue back in early January, January 9th, I believe. According to law, 60 days must pass after that notice before you actually file a lawsuit. That 60-day period is coming to an end very quickly here. Are you planning to go down to the courthouse and file suit next week?
Well, I promise my direct path to courthouses is pretty limited. I don't do much of that myself. But next week, the Board of Trustees, who I work for here at Des Moines Water Works, will be meeting in a special meeting open to the public at 3:30 on Tuesday afternoon to consider exactly that. The 60-day notice will expire next week, and the question is whether they will direct staff, myself, and our attorneys to move forward with filing a federal action under the Clean Water Act and associated or amended claims involving Iowa law in federal district court. I anticipate they will do that. That'll certainly be my recommendation next Tuesday for them to approve us moving forward, and we'll unfortunately be going down a road that's not the preferred road for us or certainly for our customers, but one realistically we think we have little alternative but to pursue.
Okay. The state DNR and the federal EPA have kind of been playing tag football with water quality issues in our state. Why did you decide to go down to the local level when it came to filing a lawsuit about water quality and how it impacted your customers of the Des Moines Water Works?
A great question, and one that we've really debated, at least in my involvement, since I came here 2.5 years or so ago. We're very disappointed by state political leadership who's failed to recognize that agricultural land uses, particularly here in the Des Moines Lobe, that's in the Des Moines and Raccoon River watersheds, are driving our water quality downward. Nitrate concentrations hit their highest levels ever after the nutrient reduction strategy came out in the summer of 2013. And as we speak, we've been operating our nitrate removal facility, a kind of a side stream addition to our regular water treatment process, each and every day since December 6th, and it's not the growing season. So what we are seeing is a path downward in terms of water quality and a greater risk for our community and being able to clean water. We're meeting and exceeding those requirements now. We're delivering water that's healthy for our customers. But unfortunately, we're seeing a context, a larger background that makes that more difficult, more expensive, and realistically more risky. We think that our best avenue is to pursue a lawsuit trying to regulate the drainage districts, which we view as point source polluters of the waters of the state. And that's the path that we've chosen, recognizing that whether it's the U.S. EPA or the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, we have not seen the leadership that we would have expected, and we believe that we can reach back to the legislation itself, the federal legislation as well as state law, and compel regulation of polluters. If you and I had a manufacturing facility or any other discharger through a pipe into the waters of the state, we'd be regulated. But agricultural producers, particularly those that have memberships in drainage districts, which are supervised by county boards of supervisors and essentially public utilities, are unregulated, and that's ridiculous. It costs us money, it risks our ability to safely deliver water, and fundamentally, it's putting economic development in central Iowa at risk, as those upstream are not good stewards, or many of them are not good stewards, of the commonwealth of this state, which includes both air and water.
Okay. You've mentioned the cost of the removal system that you have, the nitrate removal system. I've heard $7,000 a day and $4,000 a day. Which is it, or how much exactly are we talking about?
Well, and actually it's both. It's within that range, and the variables really have to do with time of year and electrical rates and availability for salt, as in table salt, sodium chloride is an important component, and realistic customer demand, as well as the nitrate concentrations themselves. Obviously, the higher the nitrate concentration, the more difficulty and more expense in removing it. And we saw, again, horrible numbers, over 20 parts per million in the summer of 2013. As you and I speak now, we're above the threshold of 10, at least in the Raccoon and the Des Moines Rivers. But the level of treatment at 11 or 12 is certainly different than it is at 20. So the cost is variable. And when we talk about cost, we're talking about day-to-day operating cost. Our real concern isn't just $4,000 to $7,000. It's the fact that the multimillion-dollar facility that we have is reaching the end of its life cycle, and it's an old technology that has its own problems, including us not being able to break the nitrogen cycle in our removal process and having to remove the nitrates for drinking water purposes only to put it back in the river because that's what our permit requires. We need to break that technology and bring in real state-of-the-art technology if this is really the context in which we're going to operate. And that's a $100 million-plus decision, one that would have each of our 500,000 ratepayers looking at a 15% or so a year, increased each year for 20 years just to be able to meet the debt service. So a huge economic issue for us, and realistically an issue that we don't think we should face, because these are production costs of industrial agriculture in the watershed that are being pushed to our customers unfairly, and we believe illegally. And that's why we are where we are today, and we'll be moving forward, unfortunately, because we haven't heard a spirit of compromise and good faith in the folks who we've been talking with over the last couple months, leaving us no alternative but to move into litigation.
Just to clarify, the new system you might put in place would do something to the nitrates to, say, convert it into nitrogen gas or something less harmful?
Correct. That's correct. Yeah. They're, you know, nitrogen gas is obviously the most prevalent gas in the air that we breathe. Unfortunately, when nitrogen in the agricultural production cycle is placed into soils and into the waterways in particular, as we intercept it and try to clean it here, we're using a system called ionization, positive and negative electrons or atoms and molecules to move the nitrate out. But to do that, we're putting it with a salt slurry that creates then a nitrogen and salt mixture, which is unfortunately not good for anything, but it isn't part of the breaking of the cycle, if you will, as if there were plant uptake involved, which is what the nutrient's intended for, obviously, when it's added to the land, or some kind of microbiological activity that would release nitrogen gas into the environment. Those are not the approaches that we have to rely on here to make it safe for our customers. We realize that we want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. But to get that level of technology will be a significant, again, $100 million plus investment.
Okay. I'd like to ask you, what does it mean to sue drainage districts? As we've been exploring in the show so far, we understand that most of the state drainage districts are under the management and trusteeship of counties in which they're located. But the farmers whose land comprises each drainage district, they bottom line the cost of repairs. So who is responsible for the drainage districts, the county or the farmer? Are you suing farmers?
We're not suing farmers. I don't intend to sue farmers. We're suing a public entity. In our view, the boards of supervisors in the counties in which the district sits are essentially their trustees. Those are elected officers, and they've overseen a process over 100 years of designing, constructing, and maintaining drainage districts that, by their very nature, intended to remove water and take it to the surface waters of the state, but have had absolutely no responsibility for the environmental impacts of that. We think that, first of all, is a poor view of a public policy requirement, and second, is illegal, because these drainage districts are point source polluters, in our view, under the Clean Water Act, and that's the point of litigation that we'll be pursuing. But it comes down to the idea that more water and poor water quality are the very product of drainage districts. And rather than deal with individual farmers, which we view as producers and certainly important components of the Iowa economy, we believe that the real point source accumulators of this pollution are the drainage districts and the boards of supervisors, who have a responsibility not only to the members of the drainage district, but we believe to those of us who live downriver.
Have you chosen specific drainage districts within these three counties?
Certainly, we have chosen particular districts for no other reason than this, that we intentionally chose areas where we could sample at the end of a pipe coming out of the drainage districts without violating property rights. They're in right-of-way, owned by all of us. The particular areas that we tested also are near United States Geological Survey gauging station that has nitrate testing real-time in the area. And realistically, these are also areas that are not being burdened by factories. They're not being burdened by wastewater treatment facilities. That is to say, we hear all the time that nitrates are also dumped into our rivers by urban, suburban users. That certainly isn't the case in the ones that we have chosen to test.
So you have specific data from the ends of certain drainage districts. Did you gather that water quality data on a one-time basis, several times? How'd that go?
Essentially, it happened for the calendar year of 2014. And what we found is 10 parts per million or 10 milligrams per liter is the permissible level for us as water producers to deliver water safely to you or any of our customers. We found levels that were as high as 70 parts per million or greater, seven times the safe human consumption level, and on a more frequent basis, certainly found them in the 20, 30, and 40 levels, which we believe is consistent with row crop use, drainage district drainage generally, but absolutely unacceptable for human consumption. So then we have about 2,000 data points from all of that work that was done in 2014 point to what we believe are clear violations of the Clean Water Act and Iowa common law about point source dischargers, pipes carrying pollutants directly into the waterways of this state. And again, I don't think any of us would argue that if that were a factory or a sewage treatment facility, that they are and should be regulated. But in Iowa, we continue to labor under the misconception that if it's agriculture, it gets a free drop in point source discharging into our waterways. That has got to stop if, first of all, we're going to make any inroads in environmental protection in Iowa. And certainly, from a national perspective, it's got to stop if we're really going to make long-term strides towards dealing with Gulf Coast hypoxia.
Okay, Gulf Coast hypoxia is...
the dead zone that we all hear about, that's now the size of Connecticut, roughly, in the Gulf. That's really the accumulation of nutrient pollutants from the upper Mississippi Valley, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, that unfortunately go into the Gulf of Mexico and deprive oxygen through the marine cycle to the waterway of the Gulf Coast. So if we're really serious about wanting to make long-term environmental strides and improvements, when it comes to water pollution, we need to deal with the polluters themselves. And there's no doubt, even in the nutrient reduction strategy, that the largest contributor to Gulf Coast hypoxia and certainly to nitrate pollution and concentration here in the Des Moines area is from agricultural users that, to date, are largely unregulated.
That's right. The nutrient reduction strategy was put in place to address the dead zone issue particularly. But that brings me to another question or comment. I've heard that should you win this lawsuit, this would be a precedent-setting case that would then perhaps make Iowa liable to suit from those interested parties down in the Gulf whose livelihoods are compromised by poor water quality. Would you like to comment on that?
Well, first of all, I think there's a leap to get there, but at the end of the day, the public policy that there should be agricultural accountability for the environmental impacts of agricultural production, to me, is sound public policy. That is, in my view, the very real attribute of industrial farming. Industrial production should have accountability. That's not to say industrial agriculture doesn't do great things, doesn't have a fantastic contribution to Iowa and national economy. But at the end of the day, the idea that somehow voluntary measures or no accountability for the actions on that land is just a complete stretch of, in my view, of public policy. Every environmental improvement that I can think of, whether it's air quality in removing leaded gasoline from the market or fluorocarbons from aerosols, or on the water side, phosphates from detergents, wasn't done voluntarily. It was done involuntarily through regulation because we had a higher national and international interest in the policy. We need to have that same focus when it comes to clean water coming off farm fields and through drainage districts and drainage tiles. That idea that huge swaths of our economy and huge swaths of contributors to water pollution should somehow be exempt from regulation is ridiculous. If we continue on this path, we're going to continue to see degradation, and ultimately we're going to see some of the fundamental underpinnings of safe drinking water threatened in a way that we only see in small bursts. Toledo, Ohio, we saw this year loss of drinking water for 500,000 residents. Prior to that, we saw it in Charleston, West Virginia, with chemical spills. These kinds of events will be far more frequent, and as it relates to my customers in central Iowa, certainly we're going to take every measure legally available to us to argue that the economics and the public health risks associated with that kind of crash course are unacceptable.
Have you put a price tag on this lawsuit? Are you asking the counties to pay a certain amount?
Certainly, ultimately, that's for the courts to determine. We will provide all kinds of information of the economic hardships that our customers have had to bear by denitrification, by removing nitrate concentrations. But the larger issue for us is moving forward, obviously, not having to contribute $100 million plus in capital investments because we have essentially given up on the idea that we should have acceptable nitrate concentrations in our rivers. If we're not successful in this action, our ratepayers will pay a significant amount for many years to be able to support the concept of us cleaning what other folks are pushing down the waterways towards us.
Okay, so although it sounds really cool to have a bioreactor down in the water plant, there's lots of smaller bioreactors that could be installed closer to the point source.
Absolutely. And let me use a little bit different analogy. Each of us drives a vehicle that has a catalytic converter on it. There are obviously millions of those out there in the American economy. The idea that we, because something is so numerous you can't regulate it, obviously flies in the face of our own experience on air quality. We can have technologies that are at the point of discharge that will reduce the environmental impacts far more affordably than we can on the downside, whether it's downwind or downwater, cleaning it out. That's just a simple rule of physics, is that things move towards greater disorder, and then to reverse them is markedly more expensive than to do it at their source. So we think our argument makes good sense from a legal standpoint, from an economic standpoint, and certainly from a science standpoint. The counter-argument here, the counter-position to where we are, is that voluntarism will bring us to environmental improvement, that give the nutrient reduction strategy more time because it'll work. Well, first of all, the nutrient reduction strategy, in my view, has nothing so wholly new that it hasn't been considered before. Conservation practices and conservation measures have been around for many years. And even if there were some silver bullet in the nutrient reduction strategy that I certainly don't see, that is a fix that will be coming our way, the idea that waiting for folks to voluntarily adopt that will somehow improve our environment in a meaningful time frame is completely counterintuitive, and one, realistically, that we're simply not in a position to be able to wait out.
So what do you really think, Bill?
What I really think is that Iowa should be more like Wisconsin, should be more like California, where there are strong agricultural contributors to the economy, but a far higher standard of regulatory intervention to make sure that agricultural production does not come at the detriment of environmental protection.
And you said that you've been talking to people, the legislators, about the possibility of that coming in, but you haven't heard anything too encouraging. Is there any bill that could be passed in the next few days that change your mind about this lawsuit?
You know, realistically, we want to keep the door open to anything that may happen, not only in the next few days, but after the lawsuit is filed, that might move us to believing that we could dismiss our lawsuit. But I think this issue, that is agricultural accountability for agricultural activities, is a large issue with not only very emotional positions, but also significant economic impacts. We know it's complicated. But ultimately, the idea of making polluters pay and regulating to support public health and safety is a fundamental principle of environmental protection that we are going to continue to raise and to advocate for. We hope there's a middle ground here that could be worked out, but the idea that Iowa should be a big feedlot between the Mississippi and Missouri River simply is unacceptable to us, and we will push forward to ensure that there is adequate environmental protection and leadership in this state.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Bill Stowe.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was Bill Stowe of the Des Moines Water Works talking about the lawsuit that it sounds like the utility's lawyers will be filing soon.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and our topic today is the Des Moines Water Works lawsuit against the supervisors of three counties to the northwest.
We have on the line someone who can explain the legal implications in greater detail. Neil Hamilton, the Dwight D. Opperham Chair of Law and the Director of the Agricultural Law Center at Drake University, has a long list of credentials in agricultural law. Most notably, he served as President of the American Agricultural Law Association. Mr. Hamilton made a presentation in Ames last Tuesday as part of the Iowa Water Conference. His talk was entitled 16 Things You Need to Know About the Des Moines Water Works Lawsuit. Neil Hamilton, it is great to have you with us.
Good morning, Greta. Good to hear you.
We understand that this case will be going to federal court and not state court. Can you explain why that is and what are the implications of that?
Well, it's going to be filed in federal court if, in fact, it is filed. And I think as we heard from Bill Stowe, it sounds like that's going to be the recommendation. But the reason it will be in federal court is that it's primarily an action being brought under the Clean Water Act, which is the federal law that deals with water protection and deals with regulating discharges as they are claiming that the drainage districts are responsible for.
So
the implications of it being in federal court are that it has application across the federal district. It'll be in the North District of Iowa, and it'll receive, I think, a considerable amount of attention, more than it might if it was in a district court in the state courts.
Neil, John Torbert of the Iowa Drainage District Association mentioned that the section of Iowa code dealing with drainage districts says nothing about water quality or regulation of the farmers. Will this be a strong defense for his side of the issue, the drainage districts and the supervisors he represents?
Yeah, I was interested in his comments, that one and several other ones, and certainly, you know, they're going to look at whatever they can claim as defenses, and one of the defenses is going to be to the court, well, that's really not our job, right? We're responsible for getting the water away. There's nothing that says we need to be concerned about what's in the water. I think that may be a little, too simplistic, because if in fact the court holds that the drainage districts are point sources and that the districts are responsible for administering and maintaining the drainage systems, then I don't think it would be outside of the realm of possibility for the court to tell the drainage districts that they need to do something. The fact that the Iowa statutes, most of which were written around a century ago, don't address water quality directly, I don't think is a defense that says they can't do something about it. And even I think, as you remember in his comments, as he was talking about what the potential solutions were or are, and talking about the possible need to modify or rebuild drainage systems, and about how as they were doing that, they could look at ways to address nitrite and other water contamination issues. It's clear that the drainage districts have the capacity or capability to do things. And I think part of the case is going to be the question of are they responsible for it, and then can they in fact be made to do it.
This issue of point source in the EPA law, the Clean Water Act, this is kind of a new concept for the consequence of row crop farming.
Well, certainly the, you know, the point source, non-point source distinction is a critical one in the case, and it's a fundamental one to understand the Clean Water Act. And for your listeners, the simplest way to think about it is that, you know, the things that come out of the end of a pipe, like the discharge pipe at a sewage treatment plant, is clearly a point. And it's much easier to apply treatment mechanisms at points, such as Bill said, putting a catalytic converter on your exhaust system in your car. And so the Clean Water Act, addresses primarily the discharges that come from point sources. Now, at the same time, though, there are a lot of discharges into water that may come from non-point. And if you think about the water running across a farm field or what might come down a street or come off a forested hillside. And so the statute talks about this non-point and point source distinction. And for the most part, non-point sources are entirely exempt from the application of the Clean Water Act. And that's why, as I said in my remarks on Tuesday, for the most part, the Clean Water Act hasn't really been an issue for agriculture, the exception being a confined animal feeding operation. But when it comes to row crop farming, there really isn't anything that the Clean Water Act has historically done. I think part of the defense will be that this water is really agriculture stormwater runoff, and so it's exempted. The waterworks will argue, no, the stuff coming out of the end of tile outlets isn't stormwater runoff, percolated down through the ground. It's groundwater, and thus can become a point source.
So if this lawsuit is successful, do you think it will result in changes in the responsibilities of the districts and require remediation or rebuilding in some way? Or do you think it will work its way back farther to change farming practices?
Well, if the case is successful, I think it'd have to probably result in both of them, because there isn't a whole lot that the drainage districts themselves can do that wouldn't affect the actual farmers who are the landowners and who are really subject to the jurisdiction of the districts. And so, while the lawsuit certainly isn't directly against farmers and it's not against tile outlets, it begins a process of, if you're identifying the drainage districts as point sources and having some responsibility for dealing with the quality of the water that's coming out of their systems, emptying into the streams and rivers, then for them to actually address those water issues, they would have to, I think, consider how you might move further up the system. That might be, installing wetlands. It could be, requiring farmers who are in their jurisdictions to have vegetative buffer strips along the drainage ditches. It was interesting at the water conference on Tuesday, there was a presentation from an engineer from Minnesota whose business is working with drainage districts and establishing various types of water treatment and water filtration type systems. So it's not that this isn't possible. And in fact, I think Mr. Tigert in his comments, talked about how the methods for actually addressing the water quality are fairly well known. It's just we haven't actually required anyone to do them.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Neil Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Ann.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. If you've been listening the whole hour, you probably know about as much as anyone about the Des Moines Water Works lawsuit against Sac, Buena Vista, and Calhoun counties. We talked to Scott Wall, mapping technician of Story County, John Torbert, executive director of the Iowa Drainage District Association, Bill Stowe, CEO of Des Moines Water Works, and Neil Hamilton, director of the Agricultural Law Center at Drake University Law School. We thank all of our guests for their contributions. Special thanks also to Irv Kloss, our senior statesman of all things environmental here in Story County, for his assistance and advice on this Local Talk show.
We've been your hosts, Gail Seiler and Greta Anderson. Becca Brown and Rick Morrison were our engineers. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
If you like this show, tell your friends. A podcast of this program will be available later in the day at khoifm.org. Or you can go to that website and stream the show live at noon or 7 p.m. today. That's khoifm.org. Links to our contacts for the show will also be posted there.
KHOI is a radio production workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team, give us a call at 292-2878 or stop by the station at 410 Douglas Avenue in Ames.
As always, your participation as audience and your generous donations are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.